Have you seen Men in Black? Well, you probably don't remember because you probably got flashy thinged. Okay. Running fast.
He's the current executive producer of the live action The Tick on Amazon and of a series of unfortunate events on Netflix. However, the last movie that he directed was Nine Lives with Kevin Spacey.
No. Yeah. Maybe the worst movie that's ever been made.
Even the worst talking cat movie that's ever been made.
The least appealing movie.
Because
it's just the middle ground that is death. It's the uncanny valley of movie where nobody actually wants to see it for any reason.
Like, nobody wants that movie to exist.
No. I do want Birdemic to exist. I do want Fateful Findings to exist.
I do want a talking cat to exist.
I definitely want a talking cat to exist. Because Eric Roberts needs to get them checks.
We need to keep giving Eric Roberts money.
Yes, he's earned it. God damn it.
Fucking Eric Roberts.
I'd like to be fucking Eric Roberts. As a talking cat.
That's my favorite t-shirt.
I'd rather
be fucking Eric Roberts. That's my bumper sticker.
That's not a bad t-shirt.
It is.
Let's make them. Contextual deviants. I'd rather be fucking Eric Roberts.
Fucking Eric Roberts. Welcome to Contextual Deviants. My name is Christian Hagen. On this show, we discuss a particular piece of popular culture art, in this case, movies, and we analyze them through a series of specific critical contexts. However, the contexts are not chosen in advance. We draw them at random using our contextual chalice. Now, I left the chalice at home today, so we got a new wrinkle here. We've got ourselves a contextual computer that we'll be testing out for the first time. And we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, welcome back, as always, my good friend and co-host, Mr. David Gutchy.
Yo.
Yeah.
I'm trying out a new voice.
Where I talk a little bit more like you.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. My name is David.
Hey, it's me, Salad Fingers.
Oh, no.
Hello, early 2000s mimetic culture.
My first college girlfriend was really into that. She was really into that.
She
just watched it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. You seem very disbelieving of that. It's very incredulous the way you said okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I made that choice. Sometimes things just happen and I gotta roll with them.
I mean, you're right as an American.
Thank you.
This week we will be discussing another throwback, not quite as far back this time though. We are discussing the 1997 action comedy sci-fi adventure, Men in Black.
Wow.
The 1997 film starring Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones as a couple.
I ship it.
It's the romantic comedy of the decade. Now that we're talking about it, though, I'd be really fascinated to see how that movie would go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe we'll.
Do you think Tommy Lee Jones would do it, though, is the thing?
Would do it?
Do you think he'd do it?
He'd do it.
Do you think he'd do it?
Yeah, he'd do it.
He'd go like full like Shia LaBeouf and nymphomaniac and go like and actually have sex with Will Smith on screen.
I mean, why not?
says David Gutchy about that idea.
I think if I were to compare Tommy Lee Jones to anyone, it would probably be Shia LaBeouf. So I think you're on to something with that one. Also, there is a thread of connection. Tommy Lee Jones and Shia LaBeouf have both starred alongside Will Smith in action sort of comedies. iRobot wasn't that funny, but Shia LaBeouf was funny in it. Oh my god,
I completely forgot he was in there.
Mm-hmm. He was the comedic relief in iRobot, which is an action sci-fi movie starring Will Smith as a protagonist that gets to the bottom of a secret.
You know what? I gotta give you credit. That's an amazing pull.
Thanks.
I would not have put that particular thread together, and now our 6 degrees of separation from Tommy Lee Jones to Shia LaBeouf is solved.
It's one, baby. It's just one.
Yeah, well, anyway, I guess that's the end of our show. Our How Do We Figure Out How Shia LaBeouf and Tommy Lee Jones Are Connected series. This has been episode one and the final episode. We'll see you next year.
When we try to figure out how Shia LaBeouf is connected to Jonah Hill.
I feel like that one's not going to be very hard either.
No, you're probably right.
How he's connected to disgraced former Iranian president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
The answer might surprise you. Number 3, save my life.
Ahmadinejad hates him. Click here to find out why.
That's how they're connected. He just hates it.
He just hates it.
He's like, fuck Shia LaBeouf.
He's like, I want my fucking money back for Transformers 3.
I mean, don't we all?
I mean, yeah. I watched that movie checked out from a library, and I still want my money back.
More like Shia needs to work out. No.
No, what?
LaBeouf?
Dude is buff.
No, he actually is, though.
You see that Sia video with the little girl?
I mean, I know the one you're talking about.
See, that's the thing.
And it's very good. It's
a very good video.
It's a
But I remember people being very creeped out by the idea of it.
It's modern dance, and Shia LaBeouf does a good enough job.
It's a
fantastic. It's really cool. It's really cool. It's a good video.
But
check it out.
The description of it does sound pretty dicey.
Yeah.
We've got some different microphones today, so this is going pretty great. Hey, David, I think we've fucked around enough.
You're probably right.
Let's get into Men in Black via our new contextual computer.
I feel like this is a time for like some chiptune music or something, but you know, an air horn is fun
We should name this computer, but first, just real quick. Computer, give us context number one.
Let's remix the soundtrack.
Oh,
that was okay.
Time to remix the soundtrack. We got to come up with a new soundtrack for Men in Black.
Oh dear.
Here's the difficulty that I would like to set this at.
Okay.
First, we should try and decide what it would be like if the song Men in Black that Will Smith made couldn't be a part of it.
Okay.
And then we need to do it where it has to be a part of it, but
like
nothing else
can
sound like it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know.
So
I just
two
like
steps.
Yeah.
Two steps.
Okay, so what would work better musically? Or let's break it down into individual scenes.
Well, to be honest, like this movie is mostly score by Danny Elfman.
And it's a pretty distinctive score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not really a movie like the aforementioned Transformers that decides to rely very heavily on the music of its time.
Yep.
It sort of, you know, it sounds like a movie made in 1992 or a movie made in 2005. Like it kind of has a Hollywood score.
Yeah.
Which is both good and bad, I guess. It helps it age, but
It's got some levity to it and a little bit of strangeness, which I find very entertaining.
I don't know Danny Elfman personally. That may come as a shock to a lot of you.
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I know. Can we still be friends? I know that most of our relationship was built on the idea that I did know the DL.
That's half the reason we did this.
Delph, as he is known, to Delph Lundgren.
Delph Lundgren.
That's what I call it, as like a fun jab. And he like doesn't like it, or he like pretends he doesn't like it. But
wait,
he does.
So do you call him that or not?
Yeah, Delph.
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 Adelph.
Adelph. Adelph. 21. His best album. So Delph, Adelph made this score, and I don't remember what I was talking about. Tangent was too long.
Sorry.
Ah, it's okay.
No, but so we were talking about the score of this movie. It's very lighthearted, but
it's
not
lighthearted.
Not definitely in like a modern, like a contemporary song kind of thing.
No, you essentially described his compositional style, which is light and a little strange.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what he does. Like that's his calling card, and he is perfect for this movie.
Oh,
because this movie is light, a little strange, not usually very serious at all. Like, so
it has a couple more serious moments. I mean, serious in quotes, but it has it has a heart. This movie,
yes, it does.
Yeah. But so let's just okay. think. Okay, so,
soundtrack.
Here's the opening scene. We've mm-hmm. got that the truck yeah. driving down the road, mm-hmm. And the bug. We're following yeah. that bug along, and uh-huh. it's a desert in at night, and there's something weird afoot. What song fits that moment?
Are we performing like anachronistically here? Can I just pick a song? Like, are we rescoring it for the year 2018?
Yeah, let's say you're tasked with putting together a new yeah. score slash somehow, soundtrack.
They lost the rights to the original score, and well, I'm an executive, okay, actually, and I have to rescore actually, this movie.
Can we? Do you mind if we try something that I hadn't thought of before?
Sure.
Let's try and think of another composer that could Ooh. Do music for this movie and what that would be like.
Yeah, because that's what actually we're doing with this movie. Like, the right. soundtrack is Danny Elfman. And then right. we can talk about Men in Black by Will Smith, which is its own beast.
Oh.
And we definitely need to talk
Very
about
Very beastly.
But that's, like, in the credits.
Right.
So, like...
Right.
It was a cultural song. And like, I remember that song more yeah. than I remember the movie when I was a teenager. Like, honestly. And so, it's its own force that we need to reckon with. But the most of the movie is Danny Elfman. So, let's replace Delf. And with who, though?
I mean, let's see.
Like a Howard Shore type would Howard do Shore. Well enough.
Okay, so what would that sound like, do you think?
A little bit more strings.
Now, just for those listeners who aren't aware, let's run through some Howard Shore.
I mean, the Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Is like, if you haven't heard the Lord of the Rings soundtrack, then like you're probably not listening to this podcast because you don't like movies, I think. or you're very impressively avoiding it.
I mean,
what are some of his other iconic ones?
Like, I mean, he's done. I don't know. I'm going to be honest. When you said Howard Shore, I was like, I know that name.
Okay.
Yeah. I just couldn't think of a single
Lord of the
movie.
Rings is the best, like, to come down on. He, you know, sweeping, majestic stuff, which is a little, it's not quite playful enough. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he's scored movies that are more, I mean,
yeah.
The exact example that I thought of was Hans Zimmer
yeah.
scoring Cool Runnings.
That was
and,
fucking
like, that's
so
not
weird.
What I think of, but, like, a composer can compose for many right. sorts of styles, and I'm sure Howard Shore could do a good job. It would be a little bit more dramatic, I think. There would be less moments where they come into a place and the establishing music and shot are a little like boom, boom, ba-dum, boom, boom. There would be less of that. There would be less fun
mm-hmm.
and more drama to yeah. the music. I think
maybe
it could
be
still
more
be
like
funny,
there'd be a lot more musical bed, like a lot more sort sure. of unsettling, like building into mm-hmm. like some
That'd
kind of
fun.
A score kind of mm-hmm. situation.
There would still be a very iconic theme. It might have the same melody.
Yeah,
I could definitely see that. Yeah, so he'd be a fine candidate, kind of a boring candidate, but he could stand in and do like a Hollywood job,
yeah.
the same as Danny yeah. Elfman basically did.
I'd love to hear a Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross version.
I was actually just thinking, like, yeah. what would
very
be...
industrial, but uh-huh. also like with moments of weirdly discordant piano samples, like just like coming out of nowhere, and it's like,
Yeah, I mean, this movie could. It could have essentially stepped ahead of its time in a way and been more unsettling.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of a cool idea
mm-hmm.
to make the score weird like the aliens are weird
mm-hmm.
because changing the score, as we all know, completely changes the context in which we watch a thing
yeah.
and experience a thing. The best example being those trailers that you just put different music to and they become horror movies.
Yeah.
Like, whereas like if you put a bouncy one to The Shining, all right. of a sudden it's a rom-com and it's
right.
like, wait.
Well, like if you, like, yeah, that's a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Like if you put like dark music under WALL-E, it looks like it's a cannibalistic
yeah.
robot who killed all of humanity.
Right. It's like, it's a great recut that speaks to the power of score to influence the way that we see something. So
yeah.
a lot of the scenes where we're experiencing, like, I'm thinking of specifically the weapons dealer scene where they, like, blow his head off and
mm-hmm.
it's very uncomfortable and he's very unsettling looking.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like,
there's
and
a
lot
bunch
of that
of
could
really
have been
creepy stuff.
Really tense. Like, it could have been a lot more tense.
Like, the stuff with the bug, the main villain, he's, like, he's creepy and terrifying.
But he's also bumbly. Like, he's played,
yeah.
like, it's physical comedy the way
right.
Danny Elfman scores it.
Right.
But...
But... you recut that and it comes out more like a zombie almost.
Yeah,
like,
he is.
Yeah, like a jerky kind of like.
He's terrifying.
Fucking Vincent D'Onofrio. Good. Seemed like he was having so much fun.
Shout out to Vince.
And just so gross.
I think that maybe Trent and Atticus would also sample some of his and use that as a part of the soundtrack for his movements, maybe. Perhaps. Or some squelches. There'd be a lot of squelches. But like mixed into beats. You know, so it'd be like, yeah, exactly. That would be sort of his theme, because it would still be fun and light, like the movie producers clearly want, but they got that Trent and Atticus feel.
Yeah, pretty much whenever the aliens are on screen, it goes into something like that. And then you get sort of Tommy Lee Jones, you'd get sort of like one of those sort of, like in the rowboat sequence in The Social Network, where they go into a classical score, but it's like just off enough. And I think they would do something like that with Tommy Lee Jones' character, where it's like whenever he's there, you get this sort of classical string kind of score. But then there's some elements to it, a few tones here or there, like some discordant notes, because there is something like he's generic enough to sort of blend in. But there's something behind everything he does that's like dark or sinister in some way, which is kind of like his whole character. Is that like he's got a backstory that no one knows, and he'll walk into a room and people will just be like, oh, he's just a guy. But then like if you speak to him, it's kind of uncomfortable.
It's kind of uncomfortable.
It's kind of uncomfortable.
Huh.
Hey, Tommy Lee Jones. It's kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would say I would be interested in hearing like a disaster piece like they did the score for It Follows.
Yeah.
And of course, he also did a million great video game scores. Yep. I mean, the guy's
Hyper Light Drifter and Fez most particularly.
I know. Yeah. I could listen to that Fez score all day. And I have.
You know, this movie could use a driving score.
Yeah.
There's a lot of action scenes that like would benefit from a pulsing sort of beat with synths over the top of it.
Yeah.
A minor pulsing beat, which Trent and Atticus could also do pretty well.
Right.
But I like Disaster Piece is a good pull. He's a pre-composer I know, which helps a lot.
You know, and I think sort of the chip, there's like an element of chip tune to it where it's got some droney, it's got electronica stuff going on. But then there's also like there's a levity to it. There's a sort of sense of artificiality, which I think would give weight to Jay's entire arc of like everything going from what seems real to what seems unreal, and then that becoming sort of
that becoming the normal,
real, like that becoming normal again.
Yeah,
could really work in the music, and I think it already kind of does in the score. But I think you could, if you wanted to take that in a more electronic direction, that's how I would think they would do that.
Yeah.
But
so okay.
So what do we think? So now that we've discussed some things we could do with the score, what are we thinking for? Let's say there had to be a song for this movie.
There had to be a theme
song. But Will
Smith
couldn't make it.
He couldn't.
He didn't have time.
No,
he was too busy filming the movie Men in Black to make a song about the movie.
He couldn't do it.
He just didn't have time.
That makes sense.
So they bring in somebody else. Yeah. But I want to try and think of some other people who could make a song called Men in Black about the movie Men in Black and what that would be like.
Yeah,
now,
okay.
Here's the game we're going to play.
Here's the game.
We're going to go back and forth. I'm going to say a name. You tell me what you think it would sound like.
Oh.
And then you do the same for me.
Okay.
Go back and forth.
Okay.
How does that sound?
This sounds possible.
it sounds
into it.
Feasible.
It sounds potentially disastrous. Let's do
it. Yes. Okay. Soundgarden.
Oh, shit. Do you want me to say what it sounds like?
I just would
not
like describe
like
what
sing it.
I'm not gonna do it. Like sort of come up with like what that would be.
It's just Black Hole Sun, but Men in Black. that's
perfectly
what it sounds
acceptable
like.
And actually the best possible answer.
Yep. Smash Mouth.
Okay, Smash Mouth I think would do very well.
I think so too.
This was like right at the start of their let's make a song for every movie kind of thing. Because All-Star, people forget All-Star was big for, I don't know if it was made specifically for this, but it was before Shrek, Mystery Men.
Oh yeah, oh my god.
They had a whole music video for All-Star featured clips from Mystery Men.
Yep, I remember that
now.
What? I did not remember that.
Yeah.
But that's from like my 12-year-old life. Like that's in there.
Right.
That's in my brain.
So they could, they would probably do something. And because it would be sort of early Smash Mouth-ith.
Smash Mouth-ith.
Smash Mouth-ith. Smash Mouth-ish. Oh, yeah. My God.
Nice.
They'd probably go something more like Walking on the Sun.
Yeah.
Where it's got that sort of like, it's got sort of
surf-rocky,
mm-hmm. but like, yeah, there's also something dark about that song that I think could play well in like a Men in Black kind of, like, server burner,
because there is, because they know there, it is a sort of a spy movie in a very loose sense of the word. They incorporate a spy aesthetic every now and then and try to make it a little mysterious and fun.
No, I think that's totally, I think that would totally fit. Okay. Dr. Dre.
Ooh, I mean, I like this one.
Yeah.
I think it would sound, I think it would be, man, see, I just want it to be like super explicit.
Yeah.
I want it to be like, I mean, it could like be violent, like about like how to kill aliens. Like it's like all about just like getting after it and killing some aliens.
So it'd basically be like the song equivalent of Attack the Block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Attack the aliens. or the other possibility is that it would sort of be Dr. Dre just being like, sure, I'll write a song called Men in Black, and then just not caring what the movie's about and just writing a song about suits.
Yeah.
About like government employees that like, and it actually like works with the movie in a weird way, but like it's critical of the
federal government. And he did a lot of like NWA had a lot of songs about like the government and the cops and stuff. I feel like it wouldn't like, be that big of a
if
stretch.
If you asked him like write a song called Men in Black, he'd be like, yeah, fuck the police.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it it's would not like going to be
a real fuck the police kind of thing. It would be very pro alien, I think.
Yeah.
Which I mean,
that sounds great.
There are definitely moments in the movie where you can tell they're like abusing their authority.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Tony Shalhoub in particular.
Ugh.
All right. How about, do you have one more and then we'll
I do.
Okay.
And I think it's because one of this band's albums has a cover that looks a lot like Vincent D'Onofrio's character. Sum 41.
Oh my God. You're right. That is kind of what that cover looks like.
Does this look infected? Is that the name
I think,
of that album?
I think so.
And I am so sorry that I know these things.
Well, we both knew it, and it's abysmal that we did.
Hi, goodbye, our last listener.
I think similar to Smash Mouth, but with a little bit more of an edge.
I think that's how you describe Sum 41.
Right.
They're basically Smash Mouth, but with a little more of an edge. And they're like pool parties.
Yeah. I think they would definitely appeal more into like a younger demographic, which I guess the movie kind of aims for sometimes.
Sure.
Sometimes. Yeah, I think going for like a it's hard to think of it. It does.
I mean, they have basically one thing.
Yeah.
So it's
that said, Sum 41, have you ever heard their cover of Killer Queen?
No.
I cannot believe I'm saying this. It's actually kind of amazing because they get the sound very right, and somehow they can sing those high notes, which you would not expect.
Weird.
It's a really weird thing. There was like a compilation. It was like a tribute album to Queen, and they were on it. The Flaming Lips did Bohemian Rhapsody, and like a few other weird ones were on there, like Bo Bice.
Yeah. Doing what?
I don't even fucking remember. His name has come up now for the first time in maybe 20 years.
Yeah, no kidding.
In a couple eons. But they did a version of Killer Queen that was surprisingly faithful. And not unimpressive, I'll say that. So if they could just do that for Men in Black.
Yeah, that'd be great. Just emulate Queen.
I don't know.
They also have to use one of their previous chord structures and melodies.
Yep.
According to Soundgarden rules.
Yeah, according to Soundgarden rules.
Could you just put the words Men in Black in one of your songs?
If you'll refer back to our previous discussion on Soundgarden and the rules thereof. So I think the music in this movie, I think what we've realized in this conversation is that the music in this movie is actually fairly good at setting the tone that they're going for.
It's good at what it needs to do, yeah.
Yeah, it fits pretty well. And then that Will Smith
Michael
song.
Michael W. Smith song.
That Michael W. That William H. Smith song comes
William
out
H.
really... William H. Smithsy comes out really, really good. For it, what it needed to be.
That's the thing, though. When the credits rolled And, you know, it's nostalgia. I get it. Like, it's there. Wild Wild West is the same thing for me.
Oh, Wild Wild West.
I love both of those songs.
Asia gets really irritated with me because I'll do the whole thing. And I always do it in my, like, white guy learning how to rap way.
Oh, fun. That's
wiki,
nice
wiki,
of you.
Wild. Wiki Wiki Wild Wild West. Jim West. Desperada. Deaf Water. Blah, shit. Rough Rider. No, you don't want nada. None of this. Six Gun in this. Brother Run in this. Buffalo Soldier. Look, it's like I told you. Any damsel that's in distress, me out of that mess when she meets Jim West. So, Aisha gets real mad.
I was just going to sit back and let it happen.
Nah, we're good.
I think
I'm worried we'd be getting flagged for copyright because it sounds too much like the original.
Yeah, it also kind of sounds like Annie from Community rapping, which is fun.
Yeah,
the delivery is very Brie Larson.
Hang on, Allison Brie?
Damn it!
Yeah,
who's Brie Larson?
Brie Larson is the Academy Award-winning actress of Room.
Yeah, no, she was on Community, right?
And the upcoming Captain Marvel, she was on Community. She played Abed's girlfriend in a small arc.
Not that this proves
she
me right.
She never rapped.
It doesn't, which is the real tragedy. That's why I got canceled.
That is the real tragedy.
I think we've solved music.
I think we solved music. Hey, guys, turn off all your songs. Yeah. We solved music.
Music was a problem.
Yeah.
And we solved
it. Music, like, what if music was just like a form of mathematics? Like, we're just trying to drill down to the solution. And every song is one person's proof of, like, a mathematical concept. And no one's able to get it right yet.
Yeah. And either we did it or Janelle Monáe did it. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure Janelle Monáe did it. Probably Janelle Monáe.
Yeah, I think it was her.
Yeah. I was actually just listening to her on the way over here.
God. You know what? She's kind of good.
Yeah, she's all right, that Janelle
Monáe. Hot take, Janelle Monáe. She's also going places. Tommy Lee Jones and Janelle Monáe, they are going places.
Hot take. All right, you ready for context number two?
I'm so ready.
Let's do it.
Do it. Pick it.
What if it was set in a high school?
This one will work.
Speaking of Attack the Block, let's talk about high schoolers fighting aliens. So here's what we got to establish. Is everyone in the movie a high school student?
Oh, man. No, definitely not. Because the Men in Black is an after school club.
Oh.
That is run by the cool teacher, who is the director of the
Rip
director
Torn?
Of Rip Torn. Yes, played by Rip Torn.
It's Rip Torn still.
Yeah, it's still Rip Torn. Yeah, all of the actors are the same, but they play high schoolers. It worked for Dawson's Creek. It can work here.
Did it?
Honestly, Tommy Lee Jones pretty much looks like he's in high school.
He's looked the same for 45 years.
Tommy
probably.
Don't crack. That's what they say.
Tommy don't crack. That's what Tommy don't crack. He is like, he is crack, is the thing.
Yeah, like, that's true. Tommy is crack.
He is cracks. Tommy Lee Jones is cracks.
He was born that way.
It's, you know, baby, we were born this way.
Yeah. So we would probably have to recast some people.
Yeah, well, but let's not worry about the cast.
Yeah, okay, it's just the character
let's
structure.
Worry about the movie
okay,
first.
Okay, perfect. So I think my idea is that it's an after-school club that is kind of an enthusiast thing.
Oh.
And then they get swept up in like a real, like it's kind of like Stranger Things.
Okay.
Where they are like, oh yeah, we're going to have a fun science club and like, you know, talk about some ham radios and stuff. And then they like experience actual alien activity and they are called upon to use some of their expertise that they know because they've been reading all of the Time Life Mysteries and Marvels of the Universe. And now they actually do know things about aliens because those things were real and they can like come in handy and help save the world.
Well,
that's idea that I have.
My question is therefore, are the Men in Black a real organization who come to these high school students for help, like an outside organization?
Ooh.
Or is it that they come across aliens and have to deal with some alien threat?
That's a good question.
Because I think a big part of the Men in Black sort of mythos and also just the what differentiates it from a lot of other alien hunting, those kind of movies, is that there is like a governmental bureaucracy have to work within, which makes it kind of a fun wrinkle.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think that's impossible given the high school. Mm-hmm. If anything, it might almost be it might almost work pretty well.
It works
well
just fine because
they've already got a rigid bureaucracy in
exactly.
place.
The other option is that instead of... The other option is that instead of setting it in a high school, but then having them go to the Men in Black headquarters or whatever might happen according to the plot, this is the same universe as the movie and the Men in Black exist, but they have set up a high school for aliens.
Oh, shit.
So that they don't have to try as hard to blend it. It still like blends in and they still accept human students, but like, it's for the people that are like freaks.
Yes.
And, but they're actually aliens. Well, it's like the school for cast-offs.
Let me refine this idea a little bit. I like the idea. I love that idea. What I would say would make it fit a little bit better with the Will Smith angle of this is that it's not all aliens at this school. It's just that it happens to be a high school that's in an area where they relocated a bunch of aliens.
Sure.
So a large portion of the student body is aliens and no one talks about it. And so one student...
They do not know about it. That's
one of the one of the students is has some run in with some alien creature and discovers what's going on. And while the school would normally try to neuralize them out of it somehow in the science room or something, they recruit him. Much like they would like a fast kid to a high school football team to be part of this organization that keeps order, sort of like the almost like a student council or like a hall monitor program or something like that for alien students.
Yep.
But one of the aliens, maybe a transfer student, decides he's going to like try to steal some important artifact or something that one of the popular kids has or like that somebody... Maybe it's something the principal has or like a particular...
Oh, sure. No, that would make sense. That one of the higher-ups
has. An item that he doesn't know exactly where it is, but he wants it very badly. And so they have to find out what the item is, what's going on. Maybe students start showing up dead. I mean, there's no reason we can't have dead kids.
We have a dearth of dead kids.
We have a moral obligation to kill these kids.
Is dearth a lack?
Yeah.
Okay, I did it. I was like, wait, did I just say a lot? Okay, good.
Yes, you did.
Yes,
well.
Linguistics Corner.
You did it.
This has been Davy's Dictionary.
Davy's Dictionary, not bad.
Could be worse.
Hey, Davy's Dictionary, not bad. Davy's Dictionary, even good.
Even good.
Yes,
I like that wrinkle. It's very good.
Yeah, that sounds super fun.
It actually does sound fun because it essentially gives you the same template that the X-Men movies enjoyed, which was depict teens but with powers or alien things about them. Like, there's a good 10-minute montage of just teens doing teen stuff, but then they have more eyeballs. Like, because this movie does that too. Like, people are just trying to sneak across the border, and one of them's an alien. And...
Right. So that like maybe once this student is clued into the fact that there are aliens, he suddenly is able to notice it in a way that other human students aren't able to, or maybe
because they don't suspect, you know. It's once you learn it's actually real, then all of a sudden you see it everywhere.
Yeah.
You start seeing tails hanging out of people's back pockets.
God. Yeah.
And
That'd be fun.
It'd be fun. It'd
be super fun.
And it would feature the teacher the same teacher that was like an alien. From Men in Black.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, I always knew my teacher was from Venus. And they were like, oh, yeah, Mrs. Olmsted or whatever her name
that's
is.
That's right.
She
would
be in it as the alien teacher.
I forgot about that. That's perfect.
Yeah, she was pretty fun. That also, Newt Gingrich was on that board.
I did notice that.
That's
I 100% spied that, and I was very pleased.
Oh, I love that.
Because this was 1997, when that would have been a very good joke.
Yeah. It's still funny.
It's
actually
still funny.
Maybe funnier now if you put a big board of people that were like, nail them, they're in the spotlight, and then Newt Gingrich. It's like, are we really still like lambasting this person?
Are we still talking about Newt
Gingrich? Yeah.
I mean, somebody's still talking about him. He keeps getting on television somehow.
I guess so.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about one of my favorite dreams that Asia ever had that she told me about?
No, but please
do. So she woke me up one day. It was during the 2012 election cycle, I think.
Fun.
She woke up and she turned to me and she said, I had a dream where a carp that was, I was walking by a river and there was a carp that it turned out was the animagus form of Omar from The Wire.
Yes.
And it swam up to me and told me that Newt Gingrich had become the president of the United States.
I mean, the thing is, I've watched a lot of election coverage and now I've decided I want the dude that plays Omar to tell me who the next president is.
Oh my God. Wouldn't that make every... Like, no matter what the result of any election
positive
is,
or negative, I would take
it
so much better.
So much better coming from him.
Why? What is? What's he up to?
I mean,
what's he doing?
Acting.
I guess, yeah.
Presumably a working actor.
God.
Whatever. Actors can do whatever they want these days. Our president's a fucking reality TV show host.
Exactly.
The rules have changed.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Any other, anything else about this? That I mean, there'd still be like the kind of love interest thing, and he would still be sort of worried about telling them because he would, you know, he can't let them in on the secret because he's privy to it and she's not.
Right, and I think based on the sort of personality type that they give to her character, maybe she's sort of like a valedictorian, like she's very smart, very...
she's on to it.
And she catches on to it, and then they have to keep, like, keeping her from, like...
Right.
Revealing the secret.
That's part of the comedic gags are like them covering it up and maybe using the thing, but maybe just like offering weird explanations for why they're doing stupid science experiments.
Right.
Stuff like that.
But she's just smart enough to see through it. And
she squints her eyes a lot, just like she does in this one.
Yeah, I think her character would be sort of like the sort of smart, brainy, valedictorian type that maybe probably wouldn't have given Will Smith's character the time of day before. But now that he is privy to the alien stuff and she's like, she like is kind of aware of it, but like won't, she's dissuaded from saying anything.
sure.
For fear of, I don't know what, getting neuralized probably. But, so I find that, I think actually a high school version of this movie wouldn't be bad.
No, it would work.
If they wanted to do a high school Men in Black reboot, I'd watch it.
Boys in Black.
Well, you remember, I don't know if you remember this, a couple of years ago, they were talking about doing a crossover movie with 21 Jump Street.
I do remember that. I'm kind of sad that that didn't happen.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was a terrible idea, but now that I'm thinking of it in terms of like high school Men in Black, that does sound pretty rad.
Yes. Sorry, that was an intense delivery, but I agree with you.
Okay.
That's all.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
Who would be in it?
Oh. Well, we wanted to use the kid from Dope last time,
and now,
we couldn't, but I think now is our chance.
Now
and I don't know that person's name either.
Yeah.
Because
no, the main actor from Dope, whose name we're getting now would be great for that. I'm trying to think of Tommy Lee Jones character. Cause he would have to be maybe like an older student.
Oh, yeah.
Like a senior, which, oh, at the end he would graduate.
But
Will Smith's maybe like a freshman or like a sophomore or something.
Yeah, sure.
But so that kid would be. Yeah, no, yeah, it's.
Okay.
So Malcolm is the main character. So Shameik Moore.
Okay, perfect.
Shameik Moore would be great. He'd be very good. He'd be very fun.
He would. Yes, he would.
The villain could be Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah, okay.
Timothée Chalamet.
That would be good. I could get into that.
Because I feel like he could do something weird with it.
I could also get into Beans from Even Stevens. That actor?
Fuck off.
That actor could be pretty good at being a nasty.
Or Shia LaBeouf from Even Stevens.
But actually, or...
Just use the cast of Even Stevens.
Or the person that played Ren Steven from Even Stevens.
Oh, man. Everyone's favorite actress, Ren from Even Stevens.
I would be shocked if I saw her in anything else ever again.
I think after that, she was in... I think it might have been a Lifetime movie about a military recruit. Or maybe it was a Disney Channel movie.
Maybe. No, she was. We can look that up later. Oh, but she was.
What a
I
thing.
Remember that.
What a time.
Oh my, it was like called Boot Camp or something. And she was like, I'm not strong enough for boot camp. And she wasn't. She's a twig. Like she's not.
It was what the fuck was that movie with Demi Moore? G.I. Jane.
Yeah, it was G.I. Jane.
It was
too.
The kids' version of G.I. Jane.
Wee Eye Jane. Because, like, it's smaller.
No.
Yep, I got it. Look, the tweets are coming in. That was a great joke. Sorry, Christian.
I can't disagree with the tweets. I don't even remember who Beans was.
He's that Lil guy.
I actually only ever watched like 2 episodes of Even Stevens.
Well, podcast over.
Oh.
This is a secret Even Stevens fan cast.
I mean, between you not being friends with Danny Elfman and me not having watched much of Even Stevens, and also us figuring out the connection between Shia LaBeouf and Tommy Lee Jones, which now would be even smaller if they rebooted Men in Black with the cast of Even Stevens.
I think we need to do as much as we can to bring them together finally, because they've just been dancing around each other this whole time.
It's like, get together, guys.
Just, will they or won't they?
Will they? It's back and forth with these two. Ugh. It's the new Ross and Rachel, Shia and Tommy.
Love what Simon too, Shia and Tommy.
They should remake Harold and Maude with Shia LaBeouf and Tommy Lee Jones.
Hey.
Not the worst idea I've ever had.
No, actually, no, that could be really fun.
It could be really good.
Oh, shit. Well, there we go.
All right.
Well, we've pitched a movie, which I think we do just about a dozen times an episode.
Yeah. And most of the time it's terrible, but this time, take it to the
this
bank.
This time, this is real.
This here is real. Yeah. Do you want to move on to another context?
I do. I think we covered high school well enough.
I think we covered high school just fine.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good.
I've spent enough time in high school today and in the past.
Well, did you spend much time in high school?
Yeah, like 1 year. 1 whole year. And that was enough. That was enough.
Once is enough.
High school. Not even once.
Explain this movie to aliens.
Oh, could there be a more perfect movie to get this for?
Damn it. Okay, oh shit, this could, okay, so here's what,
this could go some places.
This could be offensive to aliens is what it could be.
Or like, is it instructional? Is it telling them, here's what you need to know if you're coming to Earth? You're going to need to file some paperwork. Mm-hmm. You're going to need to
there
get
are
a
these
job.
Guys. Here are good ways to blend in. Here are bad ways. Just a reel of Vincent D'Onofrio flopping around.
Oh, my God.
Don't be like this guy. There's a whole series of like Goofus and Gallant. Of it, like this guy, you know, this alien knows how to dress up and sneak across the border. This alien drives a truck and tries to ram things into the back of a pest control vehicle.
Oh, like, it's like a real don't do what Donnie don't does.
Yep, don't do what zombie don't does.
Zombie don't does. Yes. Yep. Oh, that, I think because there's almost like an airport security vibe to the main area in Men in Black in the headquarters or whatever where there's people going through.
Yeah, well, there is. I mean, they say like, hey, I'm checking in. Like, how long are you here? And they like report their visit. It's an embassy, really. You know, and so it's perfect. You just show Men in Black in the actual alien embassy. And there's some laughs. You know, it's a really, really well produced.
Goofiness. And it's also like, but it also shows the dangers of illegal immigration. So like coming to Earth without proper paperwork or whatever.
Yeah.
It shows like it has like a see something, say something kind of vibe.
True.
With like the like bug alien or whatever.
That's true.
With Vincent D'Onofrio's characters. Yep, like if you see this, say something.
Yeah. If you see this guy specifically
Vincent D'Onofrio, please say something.
Like, hey, I saw him on this one show with Daredevil.
Which is a policy I have in my daily life as well.
If you see Vincent D'Onofrio,
say Vincent D'Onofrio.
You have to mark him by name or he goes free.
Call him by your name.
Call him by his name.
By his name. Pretty much just how people behave. Hey,
yeah.
The reverse of that movie title,
you know what?
Isn't really a thing.
Call me by my name.
Hey,
thank you.
Call me by my name.
My parents gave it to me and I've carried it for 30 years. Call me by my name.
If you see
Timotei.
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 I love that Timotei in that movie. You know, call me a name that's not mine.
Call me a name in a manner that is irregular to what my actual name be.
Yep.
Timotei.
Timotei.
Jesus Christ. If you see Vincent D'Onofrio, say Vincent D'Onofrio.
I love pages. Sorry.
I mean, we knew they were going to fuck that peach the thing.
Yeah.
When you hear someone say, oh, hey, there's a gross scene with a peach, you assume they're fucking that peach.
It's usually, they're usually fucking, I mean, there's a precedent.
is a precedent.
It's the peach precedent. It's something that Roger Ebert talked about a lot in his criticism, and you know, rightly so.
Yeah. This movie didn't have a peach in it, and you know what that means. Explaining this movie to aliens.
Yeah.
So it could be like a public service announcement, like TSA kind of thing.
So even though, the angle though is that aliens are real now, and we made this movie about them, but they're real. And so if they're mad, because like I could see a lot of aliens just being pissed about the way that they're portrayed. There are a lot of jokes at the expense of aliens. They are also respected in a lot of cool ways, which I think is to this movie's credit. It isn't just, I think there are, there's a lot of cooperation between the agents and the aliens. They don't just want to, keep them in line and not let them do anything. They want them to lead productive lives. They want them to be okay. They are sad when aliens die.
Yeah.
Like, they don't want to just, they're not the kill all aliens brigade.
Mm-hmm.
They're the, well, we got to make sure that this sort of immigration goes smooth, and it probably won't, so there will be some casualties, but right.
That whole opening sequence was more about just having your paperwork in order and them trying to take him in, and then the guy gets freaked out by a cop pointing a gun at him. And it's
and it was a little sad, and you could tell that Tommy Lee Jones, or Jay.
K.
Right? Wait, he's K. My bad. That K did not relish killing Mike.
Yeah.
That alien's name.
Mikey.
In the high school version of this movie, that character is played by Mikey from Recess, the animated character. Who played was a wonderful.
Mikey Newman from Movies with Mikey.
Ooh, that's good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe Michael Jordan from Space Jam.
Or maybe Michael Douglas from Wall Street.
Or maybe Douglas Fairbanks from all movies.
Or maybe Kirk Douglas from Michael Douglas's dad.
Yeah, or maybe Kirk Heinrich from the Chicago Bulls. That's a you know what? That's a pull that nobody is going to get want.
Okay. Maybe Rick Scott, the governor of Florida?
Well, is that... Sure.
That's a real person. Okay. I don't know if I want him to be in our movie.
No, he can't be in our movie.
He does look like an alien, though.
Perfect.
You should really look up Rick Scott, because he is a creepy-looking dude. And also an asshole.
Nice.
We get political, whatever. Whatever.
So
we have a pretty limited audience, and I'm pretty sure that most of them are on the same page.
And if not, see ya.
If not, or I don't really particularly care.
Tweet at us.
Yeah. If you're in Florida and you like Rick Scott... Let us know.
Then why?
Yeah, but why? And also, I guess you must be in the majority because he's still the governor.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's the weird thing about
fucking. Anyway.
So I think that it would be the excuse for this movie. It would be a good one to be like, hey, we just wanted to make a movie that would represent how hard it can be to come to Earth, and we want to make sure you're ready. And because there's, we've got all these other movies where everybody's afraid of aliens, but this one we're just afraid of the bad aliens. We're not afraid of aliens,
right?
We embrace them. They're fine.
It's almost a documentary, but
like a
docudrama.
Uh-huh.
Or docudramedy.
Yeah, a docudramedy / instructional video PSA piece.
So it's The Big Short, basically.
Yeah,
a docudramedy.
Yeah, The Big Short. No, I like it. It's good. That's a pretty good way of doing it.
Yeah. I think that would, not only would you not need to explain this movie to aliens, this movie would explain Earth to the aliens for us.
That's a good point.
Just kind of the reverse, but I like it. It makes our jobs a lot easier.
Yeah. The only part of this being, the problem maybe with this movie is if it's just way off base.
Oh,
The aliens are, let's say interstellar aliens, and they're time beings.
Oh, no.
And they're that's not us. I don't know what you think we are, but we're not those guys sitting in that room pouring coffee on ourselves, making weird jokes about people's breasts. We're not those guys.
Wait, what?
Yep.
I don't remember that.
Those four little shrimp alien things. Well, I don't think there was a joke about women's breasts, but one of them said to the other one, hey, did you see the Kaplimadingers on that one, and he was like, I'm more into Hootenanners.
Oh man, you're right.
Like, they said like nonsense words.
Yeah.
But it seems like they're trying to get the sort of office gossip vibe of like toxic masculinity talking to each other about women's bodies. But they use made up words, so it's like, doesn't matter.
It had some real butterscotch vibe, which I take from Patton Oswalt talking about punching up animated movies with joke lines from characters off screen. And his example is, I just slipped and fell into some butterscotch.
Butterscotch.
And someone we don't see, nor will we ever see, has fallen into some butterscotch in a way that we'll never experience.
We'll never know.
And so I always refer to those kinds of things as butterscotch lines.
As butterscotch lines. Okay. No, I like that.
So if you ever hear me say that, that's what I'm referring to.
Put it in the wiki. What's our next context, robot?
Are we on to another context?
Oh, unless there's other stuff. Wait, what else?
Oh, yeah, about? No, we did that pretty well.
Yeah, we did it. Easy.
Time for another context. Contextual robot.
Yeah.
What is the true meaning of Christmas according to this movie?
I love this context.
Fuck yes. All right.
Oof, okay.
All right, so the true meaning of Christmas according to the film Men in Black, 1997, Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones.
Thank you for reminding me. It's been a couple weeks since we recorded the first segment, so we got to bring it all back. I've had a lot happen. I think, okay, the true meaning of Christmas,
yep,
according to Men in Black, starring Vincent D'Onofrio.
What is it? Is it about the war on Christmas?
Ooh.
Christmas is under attack.
Okay.
And
Earth is under attack.
Earth, Christmas which is attack. Christmas.
Mm, okay, yeah.
And then all of the good Christians, aka the Men in Black, and then there's like a normie,
yeah,
who is sucked into the plot to defend the war against the war on Christmas.
Okay.
From an outside threat.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's bringing gifts from outer space?
Sure.
And it's a Grinch. He's trying to take
trying
to take the gifts.
Uh-huh.
And leave with them.
Yeah, he's trying to take them all, but they're for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're the good girls and boys.
Yeah, I don't know if this works super well.
No, I lost.
It's okay. You know, like I like this thought. I don't, him being a Grinch isn't quite.
I don't know. Him being a Grinch is my favorite part.
Visually,
so far.
It works really well.
He does look a lot like Jim Carrey.
He basically should have been played by Jim Carrey. Although this would have been a very different movie.
I don't know if it would have been that different, to be honest.
I think it.
We're talking like 90s Jim Carrey. Yeah, would have been kind of like. He would have
been like The Mask.
Like The Mask or like Batman Forever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It also starring Tommy Lee Jones.
Uh-oh. Is Shia LaBeouf in Batman Forever?
Oh, my God. How amazing would that be, though, if we figured that out right now?
I think we're on to something. Yeah. Anyway.
Was Tommy Lee Jones ever on Freaks and Geeks for, like, an episode?
Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
He was the one that sang Baba O'Reilly. they weren't playing it on the CD player. It was Tommy Lee Jones singing every part
Baba
of it.
O'Reilly. That's my favorite Seth Rogen quote.
Yeah, that's good.
It's just him angrily saying Bob O'Reilly.
That is a great scene.
It's a very good scene.
Okay.
Okay.
Here's what I think. Here's my inclination. I think it is a movie that's trying to make the argument that we are. It's a movie about forgetting,
okay,
about forgetting the truth, and so I think it's a movie about the people behind the scenes that are pulling the strings of corporate America, suits, that are making everybody forget the true meaning of Christmas, which is, of course, you know, being retired and being with your wife at the end, I guess, for Tommy Lee Jones, like finally getting back to family and what's important and Jesus, an actual Jesus being born in a manger on December 25th, the true meaning of Christmas. That is the true meaning of Christmas according to this movie, and it is a warning about all of the people that are trying to lie to you about it and making you forget with their flashy things.
Oh my God.
All of their fun stuff that they buy for you, all the sprinkles and the bows. Sprinkles? Nope.
Sprinkles. All the sprinkles glitter, you get for Christmas.
I think I was thinking of glitter
Sprinkly
and I went with
Christmas.
Sprinkles. Oh, sprinkles on Christmas.
Sprinkled Christmas, you're the only one.
There's nothing like when you wake up on Christmas morning and your mom is just like sprinkling you.
Just pouring sprinkles
on you. Pouring like those confetti sprinkles in like a little shape of flowers, and they get in your mouth, and it's kind of nice, but then after a while, you can't chew them that well.
It's just too much, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, Mom, stop, and she's like, it's Christmas!
Man, yeah, your mother has the voice of an angel.
She does. Lucifer.
I don't know why I never thought of that joke before, but that's a really good joke.
Thanks.
Voice of an angel.
Yeah, it's got the voice of an angel.
Oh, that's so good.
So that's an idea. What do you
think?
That's
one. What do you
think? That's
I like
one. That. That's one.
I would say I'm switching back and forth between two minds of this.
Okay.
Because in one way, I'm thinking of it in sort of a, the Men in Black are the sort of corporatized whatever.
Sure.
And that when they're retired or, you know, but see, the problem is that they are like also neuralizing regular people so that they don't remember that they exist and therefore right. are able to just sort of live their lives.
Yeah,
as
that's
normal,
true. That's true.
Which would be sort of the opposite of what you'd think. They
right.
Would
which want. Is don't remember the alien thing, but definitely remember corporate America.
Now, the thing that I was thinking of is it's sort of a Santa Claus situation. And by Santa Claus, I mean the Tim Allen Santa Claus with an E.
Thank God you mean that.
Wherein Will Smith is the Tim Allen and Tommy Lee Jones is the Santa.
Yes.
And he's bringing him in and training him in these like weird magical sorts of things that other people can't know about. And if they know about it, he loses his power.
Yep.
But like... Yep. But he has to learn, and then at the end, he becomes Santa Claus.
So it's not really about the true meaning of Christmas as much as it is a movie that's like the Santa Claus.
It's just a remake of the Santa Claus, basically, is what I'm saying.
Pretty much spot on, though.
Yeah.
Like, shot for shot, it's the Santa Claus.
Yeah. It's both Santa Claus and the Santa Claus 2, where he has to get a wife in order to stay Santa Claus.
Yeah, he's got to get that
Mrs.
Which he does get at the end of Men in Black.
It's
he gets
the Mrs. Claus. Oh, I've seen that movie too many times.
Yeah, it's okay.
I have it. I own it.
You own up to it, too. So
I own all
that's,
three of them.
It's big of you. Well,
it is big of me. Because I'm also married to it. Paul Giamatti. So I don't know how that speaks to the true meaning. Well, what's the true meaning of Christmas according to the Santa Claus?
It's actually a good question. I don't remember.
It's I think it's appreciating your family.
Yeah, mostly.
And
right?
like also just being a better person.
So be a good person.
There's a selflessness to it.
Okay, sure. Which I think like, is pretty common in most, you know, sort of true meanings of Christmas. So that works pretty well.
Well, and I think in Men in Black, he's learning to be more selfless. I mean, he's not, you know, trying to be the coolest or whatever. He's actually trying to help people.
Right.
You know, he gains all this knowledge about, all the other recruits who he's in that scene with doing the written test.
Uh-huh.
Which, by the way, is basically a Marx Brothers routine.
yeah.
If you watch that scene just as like an almost silent comedy, it is a classic bit of physical comedy. Like just that scene isolated alone is a very good sketch.
Yeah. And it's very, you're right. It's very classic. It's old guard. It's not like modern comedy like a lot of the other jokes in the movie.
Yep.
It is very much.
It's an old school bit.
Yeah, it's old school.
And it's very well done. I would say, like all those guys are like, we're the best of the best. Talking about how cool and good at everything they are. And then fucking Will Smith's character is like, but that guy's just working out and that guy has a cold.
Yes. I love that scene.
That scene is so great. And so I think, I think selflessness. For the good of others. I think also letting people, part of what they do is they take on these challenges. They keep people safe from evil aliens or whatever.
Right.
And, in exchange, rather than, asking other people to be vigilant or asking other people to sort of give up anything of themselves, they let them just continue to live their lives. They don't want them to be burdened with the knowledge of what's going on. So it's like an ultimate selflessness where it's like, not only are you doing it for no reward, you're doing it for no recognition. You know,
right. In fact, the exact impossibility of recognition.
Right. You're not supposed to be recognized for it. In much the same way as Santa Claus and the Elves.
Pretty much the same way as
Santa Claus and the Elves.
Huh.
So I would say selflessness is the true meaning of Christmas according to Men in Black. That's my vote.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I think your argument is probably the most sound, even though it's mostly based on the fact that it's kind of like the movie The Santa Claus. It's
basically the movie The Santa Claus.
I will side with almost any Santa Claus-based comparison and argument. So you kind of got me.
Should I add that one to the context? Is this movie The Santa Claus?
It's got enough tropes in it that like it could be fun to play with.
Yeah.
And is this movie Die Hard is one of the funniest contexts that's in there.
Yeah, and
we've only gotten it for Kubo, which was really tough.
It was really hard.
This movie would be a lot easier to make into Die Hard. It has guns. Like Kubo was
like step one.
Hero's journey. But like that was a tough one.
That was tough.
Yeah.
Was
but
tough.
We did it. We
successfully decided that it was like 70% Die Hard.
This has been the second segment where we talk about things that we've done before. For this podcast. We can also cut this out, please.
We'll also cut
yes,
this one.
Please.
So I think I think this is the Santa Claus and the true meaning of Christmas, as it is in the Santa Claus, according to Men in Black, is selflessness.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the Judeo-Christian bent, however, that would watch Men in Black and say, oh, the true meaning of Christmas, according to this, is that we're being lied to.
Right.
And that the truth is out there, and it is that Jesus was born in a manger on Christmas Day, December 25th. Year zero. He was born.
Wait, wouldn't that be... Was that... Oh, yeah, okay. Didn't they start with the crucifixion? But no, that's... I got it backwards.
Yeah, it's okay.
You forgive me.
I forgive you.
Much
like Christ forgave us all.
There has to be a certain group of Christians out there who will watch any movie and just assume that it's about...
And make it about the war on Christmas.
About them being right about the war on Christmas.
I mean, yeah, you're probably right.
The Shape of Water.
It's all about the war on Christmas. God.
By the communists.
Those Ruskies.
The Serviettes.
The
Serviettes.
Yeah.
Any other ideas for the war?
No, I think we basically covered the angles.
Okay.
David,
that was the last context.
That was the last context.
Hooray!
Wow.
Let's recap what we talked about today.
And so what we have learned.
Is
that VeggieTales? Shout out to all your VeggieTales fans out there.
I want you to never say that to me again.
Okay, that's reason number four that we're going to end this podcast. Great.
So let's remix the soundtrack.
Let's remix. And we did.
We did. Hey, we remixed that soundtrack.
We actually did quite a bit of remixing because we talked about the Men in Black theme based on four different artists and talked about which composers we would do.
Now imagine that all four of those artists are working together.
Yep. Smash Mouth,
Sum 41, Soundgarden, and Dr. Dre.
So it's Dr. Sound Mouth 41.
Dr. Sound Mouth 41.
Dr. Sound Mouth 41.
Wow.
What a terrible mashup that would
be.
What
an awful mashup. But hey, we figured it out.
I think it's just kind of one of those songs that like has a rap verse and Dr. Dre's on there. And he's like, hey, what's up? It's me. I phoned it in.
I needed that paycheck.
Yeah. It's just about him being like, how long do I have to be in the studio? Yeah. It's an 8-minute rap.
It's an 8-minute rap that's literally just like...
He's just talking about how he wants to leave and the Keurig machine is broken and he wants to...
He's just listing all the shit in the room around him. Pencils, pens, a cup.
That's it.
Pencils, pens, a cup, headphones, Beats by Dre. Buy Beats some
by
now.
Yeah, it's a Beats by Dre
commercial.
It's an
ad for Beats by Dre. What if it was set in high school?
That was a fun one.
Yeah.
Because very feasible. Actually, I think more feasible than maybe the other times that we've done
if
it were set in high school.
Yeah.
This one works pretty well.
But this one I thought worked.
Because this movie's very kooky and playful.
Yeah.
And has a lot of characters to play with.
Well, and the sort of overarching bureaucracy.
Yeah, it's good too.
Of like having a school system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Explain this movie to aliens. Couldn't find a more apropos context for the movie Men in Black. And you know what? Yeah. This movie almost explains itself to aliens.
I'm just worried about portrayal. That's all I'm saying.
You're worried about portrayal?
Yeah.
Poor Trail.
You could offend somebody.
Poor Trail.
Mark Trail.
Poor Mark Trail. Everyone's favorite comic strip hero, Mark Trail.
Second only to Marmaduke.
Mark Maduke?
Sure. Mark Maduke.
Mark my Duke. no new taxes.
Nailed it.
And finally, what is the true meaning of Christmas according to Men in Black?
Which there are a couple, maybe. There are a couple. But the prevailing one being, of course, that it is the movie The Santa Claus starring Tim Allen.
Yep, that is the true meaning of Christmas, is that Men in Black is the Santa Claus.
And that's a Christmas movie, which has its own meaning of Christmas. Ta-da!
Oh, so good. We're really good at this.
Yeah, I think we're kind of... This is our gift.
This is our gift to everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, well. David, do you have anything you want to plug? I can make a one thing.
Nope. I'm on a show called The Hypotheticast.
You always seem like you really don't want to talk about it.
I was thinking of any other things, because I'll talk about that. I'm on a show called The Hypotheticast, and it airs every Wednesday, releases, drops. Gets let into the wild for you to download from your pod catchers.
So you can get both of our shows on Wednesdays.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Wednesday, more like Wednesday.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, see what I did there? That's my patented brand of improv comedy. So I'm on that show, and it's kind of fun. I don't know. Like, check it out. Christian did the logos, so, you know,
That's true.
It's kind of like we know each other and we help each other with things. It's weird.
It's almost like we don't have enough friends who will do these projects with us.
They can't know. Check out my ASMR series on YouTube. I have a lot of tapping videos and some paper crunching videos and some sniffling videos. And if you want, maybe you can get in there and just hear me out a little bit. I've been working a lot on my lip sounds, and I think they're really coming along. Clive Owen came and he coached me. He's an ASMR fanatic. I don't know if you know this about Clive Owen, but Clive Owen is an ASMR fanatic. So you can check that out. That airs every Tuesday. It's called Clive Owen is an ASMR fanatic.
Oh, Christ. And check out my YouTube series where I review ASMR microphones, but in a full volume, and I don't use them. Son of a bitch. Oh, my God.
Is that it? Do we have to do a thing? I don't remember how we get to me ending the...
Whatever. There's a whole blurb at the end where I talk about all the shit, but that's already pre-recorded, so.
Nice.
Even though it does have the wrong Twitter handle. Maybe we can re-record it now.
We can re-record it now since this mic is kind of good. Yeah, let's do it.
In the meantime, I've been your host, Christian Hagen. This is David Gutchy. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back. We've got a very exciting newer movie, coming down the pike next time that I think people are going to really get behind. Should probably find out if it's streaming anywhere, but I will make an announcement. We're going to have another mini episode in between now and then, so I will make the announcement of the next movie during our next deviation. So keep an ear out for that. And in the meantime, David, do you have anything else you'd like to leave us with?
When does the bouncy example connect the song?
Thank you for listening to Contextual Deviance. You can find more information about us online at our website, contextualdeviance.wordpress.com. You can tweet at us at textdeviance. You can email us at contextualdeviance@gmail.com. Thanks to Minneapolis' own The Bad Man for the use of their song Gun Tonic off the album Ain't Clean. This has been Contextual Deviance. My name is Christian Hagen, and have a nice day. Have a nice day!